Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast, the podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt. I'm also known as Schmitty the Clam. I'm also known as Schmitty the Champ. And I am also thinking about the Lyndon Baines Johnson bunghole tape. That's right. The Lyndon Baines Johnson bunghole tape. You may already know about it because Cracked and other places before Cracked have covered it extensively. But in case you don't, I want to share magical audio with you, because here is audio of LBJ in the Oval Office, being the president, calling Joe Hagar of the Hagar Pants Company, which is still a pants company and everything. Here he is making a very specific request.
When I gain a little weight, they cut me under there. So leave me. You never do have much margin there. But see if you can't leave me about an inch from where the zipper ends. Under my, back to my bunghole.
All right,
then. So I can let it out there if I need to.
So yeah, that's LBJ ordering pants while belching frequently and describing his anus as a bunghole, as if he is Beavis or Butthead or both. And here's the thing about that. LBJ was a fascinating and important president. This phone call does not take away from his efforts to fight poverty or his work on civil rights or his, mixed record in Vietnam. That's the big stuff, you know. But while he was doing all that big stuff, he was also a person. And he was a person who wanted to use his stature as president to finally get a pair of pants that felt good. And that kind of thing brings us to today's topic. Because our topic this week is little-known dumb details of big historical events. One more time, that is little-known dumb details of big historical events. Because one way being alive is more interesting than people think it is that history is more than the sweeping movements of great people and armies and forces across the years. It is also wacky human comedy in the margins of those events. And I'm thrilled to be joined by two returning guests, returning favorites of this show, for talking about that topic. One of them is Candace Martellaro. She is a fantastic sketch writer and comedian for Fembot PhD here in Los Angeles, has also written for Stand Against Evil and other TV shows from there. And we're also joined by Billy Wayne Davis, who's a fantastic stand-up comedian in particular. He has an excellent album called Live at Third Man Records, because it is live from Jack White's Third Man Records there. He's also a regular on The Daily Zeitgeist and many more great podcasts. So we had the best time, and let's let you hear it. Please sit back or stand in a potato field after returning from outer space and try not to scare people, even though no one has ever been to space before at your point in the timeline. And either way, here's this episode of the Cracked Podcast with Billy Wayne Davis and Candace Martellaro. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. And we're talking about very many huge historical things today, because it turns out tons of history is full of weird, silly details. And maybe a good first one to talk about here is way back at the Battle of Agincourt. And this was it's a very famous battle of like medieval times. It was in 1415, this battle was fought. And it's famous, especially if you know like British history or French history or something, because it was the Hundred Years' War. It was the English fighting the French. And then there's a fun part where basically all of the English guys had diarrhea. No one thinks about this when they think of a medieval battle. They think of, like, I kings do. And coolness.
No, when you said 1415, my first thought was like, oh, the smell. I bet it was just horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just.
Oh, yeah, even on a good day. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there were a lot of issues with dysentery back then. And then also, like, no sanitation.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you think they were like, I got diarrhea, and everybody was like, yeah.
We know.
Yeah. We all do now. Because one person had it.
We all do now.
Don't they like shit in the street? Wasn't that their thing?
They would dump it in the street. Which, by the way, is where the custom of when you're walking with a lady and she is, in theory, supposed to be on the inside of the sidewalk.
Yes. Oh.
That's where that comes
that's
from.
Nice.
Was so she wouldn't get shit dumped on her. It'd just go on you instead.
I mean, that's chivalry, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Isn't that the definition?
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
Hey, I'll stand next to the shit.
I'll stand in the shit.
He stood between me and the shit. He's the good guy.
He caught it with his hat, you know?
You should hold on to him.
He smells like shit.
Wow, this is off to such a good
start. I like
it.
Well, I like it.
No, I took us there. And because also this is a situation where I feel like in olden times, everyone would just, you know, consume water that had feces in it or something like that in their own town and in their own home. But this is a situation where the English army is invading France, right? So not only is it old times, but also it's not their water. It's not their town. They don't know what's going on.
Ah.
You know, like, I feel like when it's a road game, it was a lot harder in medieval times, you know? So it's King Henry V, English king. And also this battle's kind of in Shakespeare. Like Shakespeare's Henry V involves this. So it's a really big thing. But his army lands in northern France and they besiege a town called Harfleur. But it ended up taking 5 weeks and the whole English army gets dysentery while they're like waiting in the same place and drinking bad water in the same place. And then from there, at least a third of the army is incapacitated or killed by dysentery. Then what they do is they march 200 miles in 16 days to then fight the French at Agincourt. And it's this major battle of history. And the trouble is, basically all the English guys still have dysentery. So they just can't stop pooping all of the time. I know it's an Oregon Trail disease to most of
us.
Yeah,
it is.
But, yes.
But it's a disease where you can't stop pooping, among other things. And according to historian Juliet Barker, some English archers, quote, were reduced to cutting off their soiled breeches and undergarments in an attempt to allow nature to take its course more easily. End quote.
Wait, they just
they were cutting off breeches, which I think are pants, and then undergarments, which I think are underwear.
So it was like a pantsless party, but like
they're
a gross one?
They're just marching and shitting while they were marching.
Yeah, yeah. And then slugging out the battle.
If you hit a certain point where everybody's got it, and it's that big of a problem, at some point it's like, you know what, let's just
it's the
let
norm.
It be.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah, it's God. Like a festival.
Yeah, like a Bonnaroo, sure.
Yeah, like sure, at sure. the end of, a, like towards the end of a festival, you're like, this is, everyone is just in filth. No one's wearing shirts.
Yeah.
No one wears shoes. I hate them. And you can't kill anybody. See, at least in this one, you get to kill somebody at the end of the walk.
Yeah. That... You don't just get in your car and leave.
You're just like, oh, we're going home. Now I'm just tired and dirty.
And Agincourt is famous in British history for like the heroic English longbowmen. Like, ah, they did such a good job. But if we put this together right, that means they were like pantsless and shedding while they were firing arrows at the French knights and taking them out.
Yeah.
So you don't think of that so much when you're thinking of your country's like heroic military medieval history.
I do. I really do. I always think of stuff like that. Like anything they were like, we were in a field, you're like, oh, I've been camping. That sucks.
Yeah.
And you gotta fight somebody the whole time? Ah, this sounds like a real nightmare, you guys.
Cold yeah. and
it's always cold.
Yeah.
Have you been cold? Sucks. You don't want to do it. That's not why I didn't like hunting. I grew up, people were like, you want to go hunting? You're like, yeah, it's 4:30 in the morning. You're like, they're like, do you not like shooting anything? You're like, that's not it. I just don't want to sit for 3 hours just cold.
Yeah. You know, later wars, like World War II, most people were sent home because of like foot infections and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't even what you'd think. It was just like, yeah, my foot got real gross.
Yeah.
And that was
it. Cold.
Yes.
And wet.
And wet. Yeah. And I didn't have a change of shoes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And we had to walk everywhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes people would shoot at us. And we're still not sure why we're here.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like every war is. It's just mostly people just going like, what is this for? Now, who are we mad at?
We also, there's a few other war stories here, and I love the idea that wars are happening, and in our history books, they'll focus on the noble things or the perceived to be noble things and all that, but then silly things happen, and Candace, you picked out this World War II story about, it's from the Battle of the Coral Sea in the Pacific Theater.
I did.
And something wacky happened.
Okay, so this is from a Cracked article. My favorite thing about this was the Cracked headline, World War II sailors desperately ate ice cream during battle.
Yes.
Like, I'm already hooked, because when do you desperately need to eat ice cream?
Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God,
yes.
Oh, God.
For the love of it. But then you read the article, and that's exactly what they did. It was
everyone's arms are pinwheeling in a spoon pantomime. It's really great.
Yeah. Yes, it's just, like, the funniest visual. In the middle of a war, too. So, basically, Prohibition happened, and they didn't know what to do with all of these freezers and things that they would use to store alcohol at all the local bars and stuff. And that's where ice cream shops basically came from, was we can start slinging sodas and ice cream in place of alcohol. And then when that ended, they just kept doing ice cream and alcohol too.
They're like, more freezers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so.
And then everybody wins.
And yeah, the freezer people were like, our plan worked out perfectly.
Yes, exactly. But basically this still translated over into war of like ice cream was a thing they would stash and hold on to.
Yeah.
So oh, this, because it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, literally, yeah. It was just, they liked it.
Yeah. No, I do that every night.
The USS Lexington was sinking. And their main priority, instead of getting to safety, was to eat all the ice cream before.
Was it during the war?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? I'd be like, fuck this. Let's just eat ice cream.
And they did. They took, what they did is they took their helmets off, filled them with ice cream, and the article describes them getting down to licking the inside of the helmet.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
So it lived up to the title. They desperately ate ice cream.
This shit's so good. We're about to die anyway. Let's just eat it.
I mean, they got off the thing, but it was, yeah, like that was their priority, was I'm going to eat ice cream before I worry about saving anything else, including myself.
I'm tired of this.
Yes.
I'm just going out eating ice cream, and another guy's like, you know what? Yeah, me too.
Yes.
The Lexington was an aircraft carrier. So there's like planes on there. It's a huge ship, you know?
Yes.
And so they told him, like, you need to abandon ship. It's not sinking rapidly, but it's going to sink. And then according to an interview with Merle Lebs by K4 Oklahoma City, the Warren officer just busted open the freezer.
Yeah.
And they were like, time for ice cream. Let's do it.
Yeah.
That's before they got off.
We got some time. I can understand. Okay, now that all makes sense. They're like, ran through and they're like, hey, shit's going down. Not in a hurry.
Right.
But y'all gotta go. And they were like, ice cream's that thing. No booze or anything.
No, just ice cream.
Just ice. Well, I don't. That's probably smart. Because if you're like drunk, you don't need to be out in the ocean just like hammered. You're like, this is a bad idea, you guys.
Right. Or that might be better.
I think because you need to be at yourself to get saved, right?
Maybe, or maybe you're more relaxed and more buoyant.
Ah, that's true.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good.
I don't know. You could pass out, though, too. You'd be like, oh, I'm going to sleep.
That's true. That's true.
Our hot tip is swim drunk, maybe. That's our tip for the listener at home.
Maybe.
Don't. I just say, don't do that. Go with ice cream.
Yeah.
I think swim full.
Oh, yeah, because there's the thing where you're not supposed to, like, eat a bunch before you swim, right? Like, when you're a kid.
Oh, he's fucked.
These guys were like, I'm in the Navy. I can do whatever I want.
Yes, exactly. I'm a grown-ass man. Like, yes.
The weirdest suicide of all time. We thought we would just die.
And, yeah, in this situation with the Lexington, like, the Battle of the Coral Sea was sort of the first U.S. non-defeat in the whole Pacific, and it led to the Battle of Midway, where they started to turn the tide, and so incredibly important battle in the Pacific theater. But also, when the main U.S. ship that was damaged and then scuttled in the battle got hit, the guys were like, I'm not leaving without ice cream. Come on.
I know.
It's so wacky. So fun. Love it.
Desperately eating ice cream.
Desperately eating ice cream.
It's so good. It's so good.
The visual that'll always stand out to me is them licking their helmets. Like, they filled the helmet with ice cream and they ate it all the way. I'm surprised no one got brain freeze.
Oh, like, they all did.
They just muscled through.
It was just a room full of dudes going like, ah! All right, here we go. Get it again. I just imagine one dude that's not doing that walking in the room and it's just full of dudes licking their helmets and he just... shuts the door right back and don't say anything. He's like, all right.
I don't know what this is about.
I'm not going to ever talk about what I just saw.
People get weird when a ship starts going down.
Yeah.
He reads this as an old man. He's like, I saw that.
And his family was always like, he never talks about the war. It must have been bad. And he was like, yes, bad. That's why.
Not the weirdest shit you've ever seen. Just bad. That was bad.
Just bad.
He's just open. I killed so many people. That's why. I don't think he did. He just saw a bunch of weirdos eating ice cream in a weird way. He's like, I can't.
I'm done.
He'd wake up in the middle of the night screaming, Rocky Road! I thought it was a mission.
We will link that interview with Merle Lebs. Also another interview with Gunner Radio Man Walt Nelson, who also saw similar behavior on Lexington. Because, you know, that was just what you did when that aircraft carrier was sinking in World War II. There's a couple more World War II stories here. One of them is about the Tiger tank, which was a very powerful Nazi tank in the war.
Yes.
I feel like especially dads are not only into World War II, but also like very specific machinery from it. Mm-hmm. So dads in the audience, you know that the Panzerkampfwagen was the Nazi tank first fielded in 1942 in North Africa. It weighed 54 tons, had 5 crew members, and an 88 millimeter anti-tank gun. Also, the manual for it had a bunch of pornographic drawings specifically designed to hold the attention of German soldiers.
That's smart.
Yeah.
I mean, love that that's what it took.
Yeah. They just figured it out. Because apparently it was an extremely complicated tank. It was sort of the most powerful heavy tank in the war for a long time. But the guy Joseph von Glatter-Gitz in the Nazi army developed a manual full of dirty jokes and like instructions that rhymed and a naked lady character named Elvira, I think unrelated to the vampire lady American pop culture.
Absolutely, yeah.
They're probably related somewhere down there.
So we'll have links in the footnotes to see pictures of this, like, you know, just porn cartoon tank manual.
They're practical. Germans are practical. They are. Especially those Nazis. Not a lot of soul in there. So it was more like, hey, just show some people fucking. That'll keep your attention.
I think my favorite thing about it, though, and if you look at the article in the footnotes, like, it's almost a wholesome-looking drawing of a naked lady, if it could be. You know what I mean?
Like, she's a good woman.
Like, it's not like, because when I read the caption, I thought I was picturing something really dirty.
Right.
And then I got to it, and it was like, oh, this is just if you took the clothes off Jessica Rabbit. Like, it would look like this.
But it was in the 40s, so that's a lot.
Oh, yeah, no, for those times it is. But it's I was picturing something much more.
I'm sure when those soldiers flipped the first page and saw it, they were like, what in the, oh, guys, I want to drive a tank. You want to drive that tank, man. I got.
Because in the war context, my favorite part in hindsight is that there was this like terrifying tank that everybody in the American Sherman tanks and everything was so scared of, you know?
Yeah.
And then the guys operating it only knew how to do it because of, like you say, like almost a sweet nudie cartoon in the manual that helped them remember stuff like how to operate it.
Yeah. It was like Naked Betty Boop.
Yeah.
Your little friend that pops up every couple pages.
If that, that little Microsoft paperclip had tits.
Yes.
That kind of just popped up and was like, hey, pull this lever.
Yeah. That's this Elvira.
It looks like you're trying to operate a tank. Is that what he says, Clippy? Anyway, forget it.
Yes, that is what he says.
Are you trying to shoot the Allies?
Yeah. And they, according to the article, they really also tried to place her next to the most important stuff to remember in the manual. Like the side stuff. No nudity. But that was the overall design.
Oh, she's got her shirt on. You got to read this. This is serious.
Right. Shirt on. It's minor details. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Shirt's off. Pay attention.
You need to pay attention.
Which seems counterintuitive because wouldn't you not be paying attention?
Yeah. You'd be looking at the boobs.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's words on this page. Yeah.
That's probably how Germany lost the war, right? Anyway.
Elvira.
That's
it's
the only
all
reason.
Elvira's fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just a cultural thing I don't totally understand where, like, soldiers in World War II, it seems like they all possessed exactly one piece of erotic art.
Yeah.
And then they would just look at that for 5 years. And then that was their life in the war. Well, I don't get it.
Well, there's a lot of religion going on then.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's a lot, true. Like, even that was like, I think it was like, you find one thing, you get to sex.
Oh, yeah.
You find one thing.
Yeah, and you weren't allowed to touch yourself a lot either, I don't think. But I remember really getting into like some military history in high school, like Vietnam stuff. They talked about prostitutes a lot, and just that was the first time that became clear. Like, oh yeah, I guess like you got these guys out in the middle of the war and you got to get them out. Every now and then they need to release some stuff. And it was just like, and then you start thinking like, oh, that's every war. That's just part of a war.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. That's like a big part of war.
It's a really huge part of the economy of war.
Yes.
Yeah. It's fascinating and sad and fucked up. Yeah.
So their one little piece of erotica wasn't cutting it.
I guess so.
Yeah, I think that was just more like, yo, no, this is all I do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's prostitutes like, no, it isn't.
Well, we've got one more World War II-ish thing here, which is about the Hindenburg. The Hindenburg is probably the most famous exploding blimp. If people don't know, the Hindenburg was built in Germany, goes to the U.S. like on tour. They tried to dock it in Lakehurst, New Jersey, May 6th, 1937, but it caught on fire and collapsed and fell to the ground.
It went
a disaster.
Places before. So before it got to New Jersey, it was fine. And then it got to New Jersey, and New Jersey's like, we'll take care of this. Yeah, fuck you, New Jersey. I like that they...
Oh, you try the pocket blimp? I don't know what it would be. Something like that. That's
I like
the
that they wanted him to name it Hitler. And he's like, nah,
Yeah, so the thing about it is that it was designed by a German designer named Hugo Eckener, and he was German but really didn't like the Nazis. And so Joseph Goebbels personally came to Eckener and said, you should name this after Hitler. Like, mm-hmm. it's the biggest airship we've ever done. It should be named after the biggest leader. I don't know, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then Eckener was like, no, I'm going to refuse, and I'm going to name it after Paul von Hindenburg, a non-Nazi from before the Nazis, take that. But then it explodes, and Hindenburg's name is synonymous with, like, an exploding blimp, not even the guy. And reportedly, according to History.com, Hitler felt lucky it was not named after him.
That's my favorite part of the story, because Hitler was like, whew.
Yeah.
Ooh, that could have been a disaster for me.
This really could have tarnished my name. Yes. I would have been associated with such a tragedy.
Exactly. Man, history would not have looked kindly on me. What a buffoon I would have looked like. That's my favorite.
I think even in putting this together, I didn't really know who Paul von Hindenburg was. Yeah. He's not famous to any of us. Maybe a German.
I thought he was the guy that invented the blimp.
Yeah, me too.
That's what I always assumed. I was like, it's Hindenburg's.
Yeah, you would figure. But no, now he's just famous for explosions.
Eckner's probably like, I'm glad I didn't name that for myself either.
Oh, yeah. So that famous Hindenburg blimp, it was almost called the Hitler, and then they didn't. Very fun. Beyond that, Candace, you picked out the story of Yuri Gagarin. And specifically one element of his, like, first human spaceflight.
Yeah. So, basically, he ended up landing in a potato farmer's farm.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say that.
Have a field or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But my favorite part about this is that the Cracked article goes into detail about how computers at that time were no more advanced than a Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
And I liked the specificity of that because it made it very clear.
The writer checked. Yeah.
Yes, they did. The only specificity to where he was supposed to land was just somewhere in Northern Europe.
Yep.
Which cracks me up so much because I'm like, that could have been much worse than where he landed. It could have been like, it could be anywhere. Like,
well, they shot a dude into space. So yeah. I think they were just like,
good luck.
They were like pretty happy he came back down. I think.
Yeah, that's true. He made it.
They're like, hey, if he comes back, we think maybe this part of Earth. He's going to land.
Yes.
We're not going to tell anybody what we did.
When you said
like one dude in a farm, he's like, what is that?
When you said this part of Earth, were you pointing to just the entire Earth when
just
you were like, doing that looping motion?
It was just like
anywhere
just
on the Earth?
The Northern Hemisphere. Okay. We're just like, he could land hopefully here.
Yeah.
If Galileo is correct.
that's
kind of
what
they were.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's operated. What it felt like. And then he also had the unfortunate thing that most of the time when they land, it's in the capsule.
Yeah, yeah.
Where his was, I think the article describes it as like a death trap or something to that degree. He had to be ejected out of it and parachute.
Mm-hmm.
Landed in this potato farm. They have no idea what's going on. And suddenly, the way it's described is this man in an orange spacesuit is on their property, falling from the sky out of nowhere. And it really startled them. They thought he was an alien. Which, I'm going to take this a step further and go, who involved with Back to the Future knew about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because in the movie, when Marty goes back in time, he ends up on a farm, comes out in an orange-looking spacesuit. It's a hazmat
like that
suit.
Thing.
But yeah, but it's exactly, and they think he's an alien, and they hold up a comic book where there's a drawing of an alien that looks like him and stuff. But it's almost like exactly how this is described.
It's just like that movie, yeah. So Yuri Gagarin. The first person in space on April 12th, 1961. It was a less than 2-hour flight. And then, as you said, Candace, he was just supposed to leap out of his capsule, parachute to the Earth. And then when he landed, he like scared some potato farmers in the village of Saratov in Russia. Farmer Anna Takhtarova and her granddaughter Rita both thought a orange-suited alien spaceman was coming to them.
That's fair.
And then he tried to say, no, I'm a Russian and I just came from space, which is a very bad alibi. But also true.
No. I was just up there for a couple hours. I came back down.
Right. Because no one's been in space until he did it like 2 hours ago.
I just picture a shotgun.
It's totally new.
There's a shotgun involved, right?
Yeah, it had to be. Yeah.
In Back to the Future, that's how it happens, yes.
Well, I just picture a farmer.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, something's in my field. Gun.
Yeah.
And then that alien, two guns. They got lasers. Everyone knows that.
What a
rough day.
That's what I was thinking. Like, I bet you they had a story to tell their friends.
Oh, well, like, I bet they told it a lot, and now everybody's like, oh, they're going to tell the alien potato story again. Here we go. It was cool for like 3 weeks, and everybody's like, ugh.
We know. We got it.
Turns out it was just a guy that was in space. We know.
We got it. It wasn't an alien. It was a Russian. We all live 3 miles from each other.
Because like you said, I think like we associate U.S. astronauts with space flight because we're American. And U.S. astronauts get to do that cool like land in the Pacific Ocean, helicopter to an aircraft carrier, heroic music plays. The Soviets seem to be a very landing operation, which is way scarier to me because land is hard.
Yes, well, I don't know. They didn't have a plan.
It's true. Like,
he could have been in the water.
It said Northern Europe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anywhere.
Could have been a lake or something.
So they were like, hopefully water.
We're pulling for you, buddy.
Oh, looks like potato farm. Oh, I hope they just tilled the ground. Hope it's soft.
We did an episode in the past about the Soviets designed a gun to keep in the capsules that came back down from space so that their guys could...
Hell yeah, they did.
So their guys could shoot like wolves or bears if they landed and wolves and bears got there before the rescuers did.
Oh, that's a very Russian problem.
I was going to say, that's their concern?
Yeah, oh yeah.
There's a lot of wolves and bears there.
Yeah. They did a lot of like Siberia landings rather than like the South Pacific, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I guess that's fair,
And bears are like, let's eat this thing. They don't point a gun at it and be like, what are you? They're like, let's eat it and then we'll figure it out. That is lucky that those farmers didn't shoot him. That would be such a funnier part of history. He's like, no, he made it back. He went to space and we did it.
Yeah, he landed safely.
Oh, he's dead. But you said, no, he landed. No, and then some farmers shot him when he landed. And they're like, okay, that actually checks out.
That all makes sense.
Okay, now we believe you.
Also, we've got a few Tennessee Smoky Mountains kind of stories.
Yeah.
And one of them is about Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory from Tennessee. Very fun story here. Maybe, Billy, you want to talk about it a bit. Or Ed Jackson in general, because he's the guy from there.
Yeah, as you get older, though, like you're taught like he's a hero, like a lot of art heroes, and then you read more about him, and you're like, well, he was a character, that's for sure.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, he was a war hero in the way that, like, people that don't die become war heroes. Like, that's a lot of how that happens. It's like, it's luck. And I don't mean that in a mean way. Like, I've met a lot of, like, war heroes, and you talk to them, and they're like, oh, it was, a lot of my friends died, and I just didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, like, he was also kind of a motherfucker. Where he liked to fight and he wasn't scared. I think that was probably his whole thing was like he, and I have a couple friends like this that aren't scared when you're supposed to be scared. So that gives you an advantage in certain situations.
Oh, yeah.
And I think his sense of humor was probably mean because people like that are kind of mean like that.
It does seem like he was, like, a lot of people would be like, wow, Andrew Jackson is so brave. And I think Andrew Jackson was more just like, not afraid of anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yes.
Which is different than being brave.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Totally different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you're supposed to be scared and then you get over that. That's called bravery.
Yeah. Yes.
But when you're like, hey, let's just go in there, you're like, what? No. There's something wrong with you.
Yes.
If you're just like, well, time for killing. Like, oh, okay.
Oh, cool. I'm going to kill somebody. Oh, it's okay. You sure? Yeah. I feel like that was a lot of Tennesseans. Because the whole thing is the volunteer state. Do you know why they're called the Volunteers?
I only know it from their football team being called the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yes. Yeah, well, it comes from any time there was a war or like a fight, like kind of a battle, Tennessee would have the largest number of volunteers for either side whenever.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. So if shit went down, Tennesseans are like, oh, there's killing? Okay.
Oh, finally.
Where at?
Yeah.
I don't care which side, just as long as I get to do some killing. Those are mercenaries. That's what that is. But we spun it into, no, we're just volunteers. We like to fight. And then, like, as I get older, I realize, like, that's still there, like, that stubbornness.
And, Billy, you were saying off mic that, like, growing up in Tennessee, you would do school trips to the Hermitage.
Oh, the Hermitage.
Andrew Jackson's home.
And it's dope. And it was the first place I had rock candy, so it holds a dear place in my heart.
Yeah.
But.
We're not buzz marketing rock candy. No way.
You can.
Give us money. There's no rock candy company. We can't do it.
I was like, that's cool. Get that rock candy cash.
This show is brought to you by the general concept of rock candy.
I was going to say, and lollipops. Like,
right. Right.
Yeah.
Give it up for candies that are made by no particular company or organization.
Just anybody with a stick and some goo, you got it.
At the Hermitage, do you like learn anything amazing about Andrew Jackson, or is it just like a bunch of his stuff?
Yeah, it's just like, it's more like, this is how old people, that it's just one of those where like, this is how they live then. And then you go through and you're like, wow. But, you know, you're on field trips. You don't give a shit. You're just like, we're not in class. This is awesome. And then you're all jacked up on rock candy. But he's a big deal in Nashville. And he seemed like one of those people that, like, the way he lived his life, people would run into him from his past and be like, there's that son of a bitch, and just try to shoot him. Like, he had a lot of that. And he'd be like, oh, cool, I get to kill this guy now. And he was, like, running for public office while all that stuff was happening.
And our story here about him that not everybody knows is particular to his funeral, which was held at the Hermitage.
Yeah, he had a talking parrot. Yeah. And it cursed, which I'm sure is, like, the first thing he taught it.
Right.
Because that was his personality. It was just like,
oh, like on purpose. Yeah, that's
yeah,
fun.
Let's make it mean.
Yeah.
This might be a TMI story that I'm going to share publicly. Oh,
yeah. It doesn't leave this room.
I'm dating someone new, and his roommate has a parrot. And one night we were like making out, and the parrot started making fun of us and like whistling, like wolf whistling, and like making kissing sounds. And it's like, someone taught this parrot to do that. Yeah. Why would someone do that? But I know why.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Because it did kill the mood, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, we were done. Yeah.
Wow.
It's this parrot's time, not ours.
That's like, that's extra. It's not just cursing. That's like, the parrot was like, I'm going to be a real seventh grade boy about this.
Or like, do you think the parrot like smelled something?
No, no. It was definitely, as soon as kissing started, it made kissing noises.
Ah.
And I was like, maybe I'm projecting this. And then he started wolf whistling.
I would do the same thing, like, okay, this is just me thinking this parrot's doing this thing. That's fucking weird. And then the parrot's like, yeah, put your hand down there. And like, okay.
That's what this was like. You know, in his defense, he's standing on a stick.
Yeah, like, and you guys just started doing that in front of him. Yeah. He's like, come on.
I can't even go anywhere.
I was watching the TV.
Exactly.
This is my common area, too. I could get laid if you let me out of the cage. How about that?
The next day, it's like, Polly says we have to have a roommate meeting. I don't know. I don't know why, but all right.
We need to talk.
I've never, like, really been around a parrot ever. Like, they're like cartoon characters to me. But apparently, they're just always saying unfiltered things that maybe the owner would say or something. Because Jackson had an African gray parrot named Paul. Contemporary accounts suggest that the parrot launched into a profane tirade while surrounded by the over 3,000 mourners who attended Jackson's funeral at his old home. And later funeral attendee Reverend William Menifee Norment wrote, quote, before the sermon and while the crowd was gathering, a wicked parrot that was a household pet got excited and commenced swearing so loud and long as to disturb the people and had to be carried from the house.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's
so Jackson was dead and his parrot was like, the legacy lives on.
Yes.
Really kept it going.
Or that's what he had in his final wishes. He's like, I want that parrot to ruin the funeral.
Yes.
That's my final fuck you to all you people.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah.
That is really.
I love that.
I'm sure there are people at the funeral just being like, this is the best. That bird's cussing. This is the best funeral I've ever been to. He's a legend, you know?
Well, there's one other kind of Southern story here. This is a West Virginia and Kentucky thing. It's about the Hatfields and the McCoys, which is, I think famous to people as like a feud in the Appalachians, right? Like it's famously two families that hated each other.
Yeah.
It was mainly in the 1880s and 1890s. The rumor is that William Anderson Hatfield and his family stole a hog from Randolph McCoy. Also, Encyclopedia Britannica says that William Anderson Hatfield and Randolph McCoy each had 13 kids. And so they basically had like matching sets of children to fight each other, you know.
Mm-hmm. Honey, they got a new one. We got to make a new one.
Right.
I wish he was more romantic.
He's only sweet to me when he needs another soldier.
Honey. Yeah, we need another killer.
Yeah. It's like this famous 1800s story of families hating each other. And then in 2007, so much more recently, there was a child named Winter Reynolds. And Winter Reynolds is with two N's, Winter, was struggling at school due to sudden anger, and they thought, like, oh, Winter keeps flying into a rage for no reason. She must have some kind of ADHD or developmental thing or something. Let's test and look into it. And the test found that she had von Hippel-Lindau disease, which is an extremely rare disease, and it causes tumors in the adrenal gland of a person, and then that causes them to have fits of rage. And Winter Reynolds is descended from the McCoys, is like part of that big McCoy lineage. And so based on this one case, like, the very late in the game after the fact theory is that maybe one of the two families in the feud had, like, a disease that causes fits of rage, and that's why there was a fight in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, like, that we could figure that out.
That's one of those diseases back in the day that, like, that helped you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think of it like that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, like, now people would be like, mm-mm.
Gotta get this fixed, yeah.
You can't. But, like, back then, they're like, that guy's good. He takes care of a lot of problems we have.
He's got all these tumors and isn't doing well, but he's good.
But every now and then, if his eyes go away, you should run. Other than that, he takes care of stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Usually now, we point him at our constant frontier danger.
Now, there is a whole family, you know, that's trying to kill our whole family because of him.
Yeah, like, and we can't pinpoint exactly how many McCoys had this, or maybe the Hatfields had something too, but there might be, like, a scientific explanation here for the Hatfield-McCoy fight.
They didn't have phones either.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
There's not a good communication. Like, if there were text, I think now it wouldn't be. It would just be like, yeah, it's because you're, oh, you mean Cousin Larry? Yeah, he's got brain stuff. Oh, that's what caused this. But they were just on two different collars. So they're just walking through the woods all the time. Right? And if I see that guy, we have to shoot him because that's what we've been taught.
I love how feuds used to involve killing each other, and now it's just like throwing mean, passive-aggressive Twitter comments at each other.
It is, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
or like rap feuds always made me laugh because I'm like, oh, they're doing mean poetry.
Yes, that's exactly it.
That's, since I was like in high school, I was like, this is silly, you guys. You guys are rhyming in a mean way. It's so silly.
Right. Drake and Meek Mill keep coming up with these very vengeful stanzas.
Yes.
You know, like, that's what's going on.
Listen, these poets, they're mad.
Will he escalate with further pentameter?
Jay-Z made his fortune selling drugs and poetry. That's crazy.
That might lead us pretty neatly into another story here. A Space Shuttle Challenger. It was a very famous explosion of a space shuttle in 1986. It blew up 73 seconds into flight.
Everyone was watching.
Everyone was seeing it on TV. Lots of people remember where they were when they saw it. And, of course, big tragedy. And then NASA immediately begins a massive search for wreckage and also for remains. But a fun thing happens within that, where NASA had experts spending 9 weeks working 15-hour days combing 420 square miles of the Atlantic Ocean. So just a massive oceanic search.
But around Florida. Right?
Yeah, around there, yeah.
Yeah, in the 80s? I know where you're going. I think I know where you're going with this.
Might be relevant to the result here, because they found a bunch of junk, you know, like batteries and paint cans and refrigerator and stuff. They also found an old missile and a few shipwrecks. But the main fun thing they found is a duffel bag containing 25 kilograms of cocaine.
That's a lot.
Which was street value $13 million.
That's a lot.
So if after the, you know, everyone knows the Challenger explosion, nobody knows that in the aftermath, the search found all kinds of drugs all the time.
Yeah, because that was the heyday of them just flying cocaine in from Colombia. We've all seen Cocaine Cowboys. We know how they did it.
Yeah.
But
it's a Scarface situation.
I never thought about the Challenger messing up those cocaine routes.
Yeah.
But I bet it messed up how they were smuggling drugs for at least,
because the sea was monitored for 9 weeks
so harshly.
Yeah.
And they were already flying low to get under the radar. That's how they would do it. And then they would drop bags and somebody would come pick them up. That's how they do it a lot. And it was on that side of Florida, because they wouldn't watch that side. They would watch the Gulf side. So they would fly in the other side. And now the Challenger blows up a bit.
Just
pictured drug traffickers just being like, oh, I had no idea he cared about the space program like this. He's just crying. He's like, oh, he loves astronauts.
It's such a good route. We got a couple more stories here, and it's two different stories about how people got recognized in very dire situations. And one of them is Osama bin Laden, who is a well-known person for stuff like 9/11. And there's a very serious story of the raid to kill Osama bin Laden, which was SEAL Team 6 on May 2nd of 2011. They raided his compound near Abbottabad in Pakistan, and they killed him, shot him. And then what happened was they had a body, and they were like, we need to make sure it's Osama bin Laden. And then something silly happened, which is that they couldn't do like a DNA test because that's a bunch of lab work and stuff. You can't do that, you know, in the field. They also had shot him a little too much in the head region to do facial recognition.
They put two in his skull.
Yeah.
That'll so it makes kinda, you look different.
Yeah, right. Yes. Not to linger on it, but that's what happened. And so what they knew is, hey, we know that Osama bin Laden is 6 feet, 6 inches tall, which not everybody knows. He was like small forward sized, you know?
Skinny and, too.
Skinny guy, yeah. And so they said, hey, he was 6 foot six, and we've got a member of the SEAL team who's like 6 foot even. And so why don't you lay down next to the body? And then they used that guy as like an approximate ruler or tape measure type situation. And then they said, okay, that body's about 6 inches taller than our soldier. So that is ID. We did it.
And best that's how of the best. That is so pretty smart.
It's smart. It's just, it's like probably the most like serious military raid of my entire lifetime. And it concluded with this kind of silly version of a tape measure. You know?
I love it because it's genius, but also so stupid at the same time.
Like it's Jenkins, come lay down here.
Yes. Also, like, this is unlikely, but what if it happened to just be some other tall man who looks like...
Yeah, they got him back. You're like, oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, this is just their power forward. Oh, no. We killed the only other tall guy.
In all of Pakistan, yeah.
Well, they've also found like a bunch of porn and stuff on his stuff.
That's true. I guess his hard drive had a lot of just stuff.
Yeah. Obviously, if it's porn, it's bin Laden's, clearly.
Well, I was just curious like what kind it was. It was like people pretending to be him, that kind of stuff. He's like, look, it's me.
Oh.
Because he's like pretty famous, you know?
Yeah, yes.
Just how vain he was, or just like...
It's well known.
Yeah. I mean, and I also know enough people in the military to know that, like, all those dudes have a great sense of humor because you have to do what you're doing.
Sure.
So every time I do picture all that stuff, I'm like, there's a level of silly going on, too, because you have to balance out that stuff or you'll go crazy. Mm-hmm. So I just picture, like, some of the pictures that they have of that raid, like... I'm sure there's some silliness going on that they're like, we can't show this or we'll get put in jail. But look how funny this is. Like, you know?
Yeah. I'm drinking out of his coffee mug. Ha ha ha.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Or just like pictures of what's on his refrigerator or stuff.
Yeah.
Just like that. Yeah. Or like, look, he had herpes. Look. Just that stuff.
Yeah. It's weird. Any quotidian thing going on in this raid is just interesting.
Oh, yeah.
The weirdest thing in the world.
Yeah. Them dumping his body in the sea? I didn't like that either.
Apparently that's the normal thing to do, but I don't really know. I don't know what the protocol is.
Never heard of that shit before.
Yeah, that's Osama for you. And then the other one is Louis XVI, who was the king of France. Bit of a different story. But the French Revolution is happening from 1789 onward. And then Louis XVI will be killed January 21st of 1793 by guillotine, as they do. And then Marie Antoinette in October of 1793 also guillotined. Before that, Louis XVI, the King of France, and Marie Antoinette and other people said, hey, there are mobs everywhere and they're cutting everyone's heads off. What we should do is try to escape France in disguise. And so they said, we're just going to get out of the country by pretending to be other people.
Smart.
And they had moved from Versailles to a palace in Paris called Tuileries because Versailles was attacked by a mob. But then a mob was coming for Tuileries. So June 20th, 1791... they said, time for disguises. Louis XVI disguised himself as like a valet, you know, if you've seen Downton Abbey, like a footman. And then Marie disguised herself as a Russian governess raising children. And also all of their young boys were dressed as girls because, oh, disguise. Now who are they, you know? So they're doing this disguise to try to get out.
And the boys will be girls.
Yeah, foolproof. And so they're doing...
We're as good as free.
So apparently they then try to leave Paris in disguise as regular people, and they get most of the way away with it. But then a postmaster says, hey, I think I recognize them from something. And so the way Louis XVI gets caught in disguise is that somebody, specifically this postmaster, just looked at money. So he looked at a 50 livre note and said, oh, yeah, that's the guy on the money. Yeah, and then that's how he got caught. which is a great foiling of disguise situation where you're just printed on all the money, so you can't do it.
That's the universe taking care of you and your vanity.
Yeah.
That's pure karma right there. We're like, I want my face on all the money. And then you're like, I got to get out of here. And I didn't think this through.
My face is everywhere.
I misunderstood at the beginning. I thought that they had already did the disguises and then just moved to another palace. I was like, they're like, oh, we'll hide out in this like shitty palace. They won't look here. That's how aristocratic they are.
Right.
Like they can't even, where would a poor live? Oh, look at this shitty castle.
We don't even have pet giraffes here. How could anyone important?
This is disgusting.
You said, where would a poor live?
That is.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they were trying to get to the Austrian ruled Netherlands. That was the plan.
My concern here, though, is like, it's an image on money. What if it's not totally accurate? Like, it makes me think of, like, that John Mulaney joke about killing Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, well, what if I'm wrong?
And it's just a regular guy
who looks like him? Yeah,
yeah, it's just that mustache wasn't...
Yeah.
It wasn't out of style yet. Just a lot of people had it. And he shoots the first guy he sees with it. And then there's, like, three people. He's like, oh, no.
Yes.
No, this is before they know he's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because this is also powdered wig times. Everybody kind of looks the same in a powdered wig.
Yeah,
you can't tell.
That's kind of my thought of, like, it's probably not the most spitting image on the money. What if they were wrong?
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Most people were hideous, dirty people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
This dude probably had a look about him. Like, you know how you see rich people and they shine sometimes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Because they don't have stress and they just take care of
money.
Yeah, and they...
So they have better skin.
They'll also, a lot of times they're wearing a t-shirt that's just like better. And I don't, you know, like it's just better somehow.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, the fabric's better. That's all it is.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
No, it is. That's
but,
what it
but
is.
But I'm mystified somehow still. Yeah.
No.
Well,
they've
spent $200 on it.
Yeah.
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 No, and even the skin and stuff, a lot of times it's just like, oh, you have better vitamins and you can afford a better regime. So even if you're not wearing makeup or had work done, you just look better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're the kind of shine. I've played certain festivals that are just for rich people, and you walk around, you're just like, what is, everyone has at least $250,000 here.
Yeah.
So they shine because they don't care about stuff. It seems nice.
They're well rested.
That's what I imagine that, like, especially in that time.
Yeah.
It's like the wealth discrepancy was so, and that just the postmaster was like, that's a good looking foot dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, that's who that is.
And then they double checked. What they did is they found, and the story says it's an old man who lived near the palace. So he was very, very used to bowing all the time to the royalty as they went by.
Yeah.
And so they brought the old man in, and he just immediately instinctively bowed when he saw them. And so they were like, confirmed. Which is
like
also
they
very
saw
funny.
The old man walk in, and all three of them are like, oh, shit.
Oh, no.
He's going to do it.
I love it. This is similar to the system of measuring bin Laden by a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If he bows, it's all
over. He has the special skill of just like deference. So that's how they figured it out.
Yes.
Or they just didn't have a tape measure on that raid.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just didn't have
like,
one.
They were like, hey, do you have, I just have more bullets. What do you have? I have grenades. Does anyone have a tape measure?
So many bullets.
Jenkins, lay down beside him.
We have a...
Jenkins is just looking porn. What?
Well, it's a porn manual. It's a lot of important instructions.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This isn't porn. This is how to drive a tank. What are you jacking off to? A tank manual?
I only jack off to it for the tank instructions.
The military. We got to get these guys. We got to get some R&R to these guys.
Jacking off a tank manual.
It's hot.
Tanks.
Have you seen Elvira?
She is wholesome.
Folks, that is the episode for this week. My thanks to Billy Wayne Davis and Candace Martellaro for looking back across the years with me and finding a surprising number of parrots in the past and present and many other fun stories from there. In our footnotes, you will find the many cracked sources and outside sources, because we always use both, used to assemble this episode. I particularly recommend looking at the pictures of the Tiger Tank Manual, because, again, they're weirdly erotic and also just kind of silly and cute, and that was how they taught people to man the most fearsome tank of World War II Europe, was with, like, a little nudie cartoon thing. Really silly. And of course, we are linking to the work of both of our guests. Candace Martellaro is at Candace Mart, and that's Candace with a K. So it's K-A-N-D-I-C-E-M-A-R-T on Twitter. And her group, Fembot PhD, is awesome. And you can find them at fembotphd.com. And then Billy Wayne Davis is at Billy Wayne Davis. And if you want to see him on tour, that is bwdtour.com. He's fresh off many shows and doing many more. Always great to see. And beyond all that, our theme music is Chicago Falcon by the Budos Band. This episode was engineered by Megan Donis at Little Everywhere in beautiful Glendale, California. Then it was edited by the indispensable Chris Souza. If you love this episode, that's great. If you hated it, please let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media. A thing that, like, needs to be in history books now. It would be weird if they didn't include it. It's having a big impact on everything. Like, if my potential future children take AP US History and read about 2016 and there is no picture of a Pepe in the history book, I don't like Pepes, but that's history. That goes in there. It's just kind of a thing that belongs. Educate my kids. Anyway. My Pepe-free, Snoopy-heavy Twitter account is at Alex Schmitty. My Instagram is at Alex Schmitztagram. And I'm on the wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. That's got my show dates, my fun email newsletter of free internet stuff tips, and more. And I'm here to say we will be back next week with more Cracks Podcast. So how about that? Talk to you then.